Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. America, all the chips in the PC. It is Saturday, the sixth day. Unbelievable already, April 2019. And you, you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And we're going to be bringing you news, views, things to choose, nothing to lose. Kick off your shoes. Don't get the blues. Yes, you're lucky that it's Soundbites. You're lucky Steve Ray is one step ahead of the law somewhere in the Midwest. And we don't have a substitute person for him. And you're lucky we are done with the pledge drive. I want to thank, we made our goal yesterday. I want to thank each and every one of you who called in. I am humbled at the outpouring of support for this station and for this show and for us. And those of you who didn't pledge, well, you keep listening too. The other thing, however, is the poll is broken, and I'm not sure why. I worked on it a bunch this morning. I'll continue to work on it. I don't know what happened to it. I don't know. But, yes, the pledge is broken. But we still have the news.
You mean the poll is broken.
What did I say?
Pledge.
Yeah, no, the pledge is fine. You can still pledge if you want to.
Yeah.
Jazz901.org.
Don't ever turn down money.
Right, hit the donate now button and make your pledge. But in the meantime, the poll is broken, and I will read the news. Whew. I gotta finish this coffee.
Glad we got that straight. Yeah,
you haven't even had coffee, and you're more awake than I am.
That's scary.
Yeah, the first Tuesday of the month, or as Microsoft prefers to designate it, a week, not a week, a week, usually brings a healthy dose of non-security office patches. This Tuesday was no exception, but there are two big differences. First, there's no official list of the patches. Second, many of the patches appear to be re-releases of patches that originally appeared in March. Every month we get a list of patches, office patches, on the MSDN developer blog, and an entry from the Office Sustained Engineering Group. This month the link goes to a 404, this page has been disabled, message. Several people have pieced together lists on the updates from various sources, but it's certainly not official, and there's no official list anyone can find on Microsoft sites. And most of these sites cover the MSI perpetual versions of Office, not the click-to-run version. Not to be outdone in the vanishing documentation competition, Microsoft's latest updates for versions of Office that use the Windows installer, that's the MSI thing, Microsoft installer, haven't been updated, nor have fixes or workarounds for recent Office issues. These unofficial lists that people have pieced together do include a number of patches that were apparently released in March, on March 19th. Just to take one example, for KB4011666, that's 666, which Microsoft calls the April 2, 2019 update for Office 2016 under details, you will see that Microsoft thinks this patch was published on March 19th. So we have an unlisted set of 20 patches claimed to be published on April 2nd, most if not all of which were also claimed to be published on March 19th. You should still install these patches since they'll make Office just a tiny bit less broken, but it is a pig and a poke at this point. So our poll of the week, no point in it, you can still make your mark in the forum. So if you scroll down on the right under Fascinating Stuff, the first link there is the forums. The second forum down is the poll discussion. Currently, at least the number one item under poll discussion is 6/19, which Office suite do you use the most and why? So far, there are five posts, people who are frustrated that they can't be in the poll. They can't actually take the poll, I'm sure. When you're done with that, come on back and chit-chat with us. You can give us a call. By the way, now that the pledge drive is over, you don't have to cower at the foot of your closet And instead, you can come back and give us a call at 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415. Those numbers are, of course, also on our website at soundbites.org. That's bites with a Y. Francis would like us to remind you. People are still using Office pretty high numbers of people are still using Office.
Unfortunately.
Well, I'm not sure why. I mean, Office is something you have to pay for. And there's almost, unless you are in one of the very, very esoteric fields, like, for example, lawyers have add-ons for Office that for Word that do the numbering and paginating and all the other things that law offices do. And there are a couple of other specialized formatting macros and things that people can use. But in general, for 99.9% of us, Office doesn't offer any improvements. Microsoft Office doesn't offer anything special. So why are people paying for it? LibreOffice is free. Google Docs is free. iWorks is free. I'm not at all sure why people don't take advantage of those free things instead of continuing to pay for Microsoft Office. It's very weird to me. LibreOffice and Google, I used LibreOffice for most of 20 years. I used Google Docs for about 5 years while I was working for a living, and nobody knew the difference. Because both of those programs will read and write Microsoft formatted documents. So it's pretty clear that much of that stuff is available to everybody. So I don't know why people pay. I really don't. But I guess if you want to spend the money, you should spend the money. Good for you. Why not? So let's go to the phones. Our first caller is Dwayne. Dwayne, where are you calling from?
Boys, appreciate your program. My question is a simple question.
Well, hold on a second. Hold on a second, Wayne. Dwayne, where are you calling from?
In Buffalo.
Buffalo, thank you.
I ran a USB Linux program that I use personally. You guys talk about Linux a lot, and I've used it for about exclusively. I walked away from Windows when they came out with Windows 7. I was totally fed up with all the entanglement, and it's just gotten worse since then. I'm real good using Nopix Linux as my personal product choice, and it's a live flash drive operating system. It doesn't even need to be installed through a hard drive.
Right.
But I was working on a friend's Windows 10, which I can also operate, but it's, you know, but, and I was testing their system. I was just testing the HP Pro notebook computer that they have a fresh install, and it's working just fine. I was just going to show them something off of my Nopix operating system, and I put it in a USB port, and it operated the notebook perfectly, but it did the same things that I've seen Windows 10 doing in the past, which is that the Windows 10 was broken. The Windows 10, which is a hard drive installation on the laptop, was broken by having the Nopix operating system working the computer through the USB port as on a live flash operating basis. Just the next boot up on the Windows 10 machine, then Windows 10 went into repair mode and doesn't want to boot. Now, I'm not calling to ask you how to fix it. I'll figure out how to fix it, and I'll go through the aggravation of fooling around with Windows again, which is why I walked away from the Windows years and years ago for all the fooling around that you guys are constantly talking about and everyone constantly has to put up with when we don't have these problems, when we use clean products with clean software, like in this case, my case, Nopix Linux operating system. And so my point is, what broke? And why does Windows 10 get broken with a non-invasive use of an interim operating system, operating through it circumventing it on boot through a external port. And then how does it break the boot system? Why does it break the Windows boot system? And why does Windows have to be repaired after a situation like this? I mean, what is actually happening? Do you guys have a point of view as to, like, how that can be avoided, or why does it, and why and how does that break Windows 10?
I've done the same thing you've done. I've done it with Nopix. I've done it with various versions of Ubuntu.
Sure.
And I've never seen this. What it sounds like, what it sounds like is at some point you tried to save something to the drive.
Tried to save something to an external, another external flash media that I had in it. I did not try to save anything to the hard drive. But I can't. But in any case, I did try to save some files. But I run the Nopix. I run the USB, and you're right. You can run mostly any Linux system today. Run it straight off of a flash.
Sure.
Flash in a USB stick or whatever device, you can run it externally and not have to install it in any computer to operate any computer, and that's what I was doing with this Windows 10 computer, and when I want to take a file, how I manage my personal document files in an environment like that is I have the operating system purely the operating system, the Linux operating system, on a USB flash stick, which I stick into any computer and run the computer. The computer doesn't care or know where it is operating it. And then I also take another flash stick, which I just use for documents, my documents, and any other things, and I stick that in the computer also. And when I want to save documents or save files or write files or operate files, I stick those files onto the separate drive, onto the separate flash drive, and I walk. And so I use two flash drives, one to save files.
No, I get all of
and
that.
One for the operating system.
I understand that, but I think what may have been the problem is when you rebooted into the flash drive. Did you, when you shut the system down?
Okay.
You may have used the new hybrid shutdown, which is a pain in the neck. Basically, it's actually logging off and hibernating. That causes a problem when you mount an NTFS partition. What you need for future use, before we get to solving the actual problem, what you need to do in future is do a full shutdown of Windows 10. And you do that by, when you click on shutdown, you also hold down the shift key.
Oh, okay. I know I held down the shut off button for 4 or 5 seconds, and
that doesn't do it.
Hard shutdown.
Yeah, but it doesn't anymore.
Oh, okay.
Since Windows 8, as a matter of fact, it does that hybrid shutdown horse manure.
Okay.
So I'm not. You might be able to fix it. You might be able to fix it with NTFS fix. But because what happens is there's a couple of...
I haven't tried any repair programs on it. I just let it try its self-repair. I let it try to do its self-repair, and it was not able to do its execute a self-repair.
Right.
Before I did anything on this computer, it was a fresh install on this person's computer, friend's computer. I did make a copy of the operating system with the repair disk feed.
Good.
Your Microsoft repair disk.
Good.
I downloaded that. I made a fresh 16 gigabyte flash drive just for this kind of a problem.
Good.
Just for an external repair possibility, if anything ever needed to be done.
So you might want to. So it doesn't hurt if you want to try NTFS fix. And the reason for that is when you use this nonsensical hybrid shutdown junk,
okay,
and then reboot into Linux, it seems to introduce some fundamental NTFS inconsistencies.
Okay. Well, yeah.
When you use NTFS fix, it basically resets the NTFS journal file and schedules an NTFS consistency check when you reboot into Windows, and that should fix it.
In the old days, let's say in the Windows XP and to 7 era, at least that I was familiar with, just a simple running check disk would have done.
And the problem is that since Windows 8, it's been this hybrid shutdown thing.
And now it's a hold the button. That's a hold to shut off the power button down, and also click the shut off menu.
What you do is when you are doing a shutdown of Windows,
right?
You do it from the menu,
right?
Where you click shutdown.
Shut off menu. Right. Shut down. Right.
But before you click shutdown, hold the shift key.
Okay, it's the shift key.
It's
okay.
Shift click.
Shift, yes.
Right, hold that shift key down while you click. That does a full and complete shutdown, not this hybrid shutdown nonsense.
Boy, this,
and the reason for that, of course, is because Windows 8 and now Windows 10 take about, 3 hours to boot up when they're cold. So what Microsoft has done in order to make that seem faster is they actually put the system into hibernation when you do a log off instead.
And now NTFS fix it. Where is that? Where's that app or where's that download located at?
It should be one of the files that you can install in Nopix.
They probably already have something like that. But okay, yeah. So you think I should repair this thing with my Nopix system and just somehow run a repair through that?
Yeah, sudo NTFS fix /dev/whatever it is.
Okay, yeah. I want to say this. I'll get to the bottom of this, but I don't want it to be broken again. And you say I probably broke it by shutting it off properly, and then maybe opening it back up again 10 minutes later to do something else. And by the time, at least one or two cycles of monkeying around like that, will break the. What is it? It's part of the boot setup.
Yep.
Is that what it is?
Yeah, it is.
Yeah. I just want to say this for all of the people who can hear these guys, these great guys talking about Linux for so many years, and I've heard many callers that say it's too tough, it's too hard. I would just tell everyone to just get the Nopix operating system or other USB flash, whatever they wish, although I do believe Kostnopper has the cutting edge on basically everything, and they've got one right now in beta that will be coming out in about a month, a free download that will be an amazing thing because he's rewritten the entire kernel, and he is absolutely the master in the flash operated live operating system, as well as forensics digging around. It's just as clean as anything could ever possibly be, and really, it's just so simple. The only problem is there's not a lot of mentoring available and so forth. But it certainly doesn't hurt anything to utilize. But I do really utilize it, except when you have a call like this where a guy breaks something without even realizing. It can be broken by some other problem that Microsoft has built into the Windows 10, a sense that results in a tremendous sensitivity.
We have to take another call.
Thank you.
Bye. I don't mean to be rude, but that was 25 minutes, and we need to move on to other calls. But Nopix, he's right. Nopix is indeed a very cool operating system, it's free. It's a Linux operating system, and you should be able to download it for free and And if you want to play with it on an old machine or run it from a flash drive, and actually, Nopix is in fact designed to be run from a flash drive, so it means you can use it on any operating system. But if you do, make sure you shut down Windows 8 or 10 correctly. All right, we've got a couple of minutes to talk to Bob from Henrietta. Hi, Bob. What's up?
Just a suggestion for your prior victim. There's a disable fast shutdown setting in Windows 10 in the power setting someplace. That might do the same thing as the shift plus shutdown.
Right. It's you're absolutely right. There is that in the power options, and that fast shutdown is essentially that hybrid shutdown, and it's really a hibernation, log off and hibernation, which means that Windows then boots up faster, but can cause a few little issues.
Well, you're not supposed to run anything but Windows anyway, so.
Well, that's exactly right. I don't know what you're doing fooling around with all these useful operating systems.
But I just thought I'd make that suggestion because I found that out the hard way a couple of years back.
That's a great suggestion. Thanks, Bob.
You're welcome.
Thanks. Yeah. We talked to a lot of people who've gotten fed up with Windows, frankly, and they are looking for something else, something different, something unusual maybe. But Linux really, depending on the version you get, is not unusual. There are Linux versions that mimic Windows quite closely, so you don't even have to learn a new user interface if you don't want to. I prefer Xubuntu with the XFCE front end. The lovely thing about Linux is that there are multiple front ends. Windows has only one front end, the Windows front end. And that's the thing that made everybody angry on Windows 8. They changed that front end. They changed the user interface, UI. And that made it very difficult for people who only wanted to ever see the standard Windows UI. So they went back to it in 10. But you can mimic that almost completely in various versions of Linux. But for those of you who are a little more adventurous, there are all kinds of really utterly gorgeous UIs that you can run. And the better your graphics tablet, the more amazing your desktop can look. But it's certainly, you know, as Dwayne and Bob said, you can run Linux off of a thumb drive, but make sure you do a real shutdown before you try it, because it may, not always, but it certainly may cause an issue and with that hybrid shutdown nonsense. So be careful, be aware that there is that possibility. I know a lot of people have put Linux on their old laptops, for example, and they run a little slow then if it's a very old laptop, but they run and they run fine, and you can get a lot of additional life with a lot of new stuff out of your old hardware. Listen, we're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, me, Nick Francesco, and you. 29 minutes after the hour, Soundbites member supported Jazz 90.1.
It's America's longest running computer show. Back to more Soundbites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And, oh, yeah, we're not sitting here waiting for Steve to speak.
Yeah, he's not going to show.
He ain't going to be doing that. Steve Ray is one step ahead of the law somewhere in the Southwest, hiding among the mesas and the Badlands, flogging his horse to get into the Box Canyons before the posse gets to him. And we are Soundbites right here on Jazz 90.1. While you call in at 585-966-JAZZ, that's 966-5299, toll-free 1-800-790-0415, I will read another news item. A wave of DNS hijacking attacks that abuse Google's cloud computing service is causing consumer routers to connect to fraudulent and potentially malicious websites and addresses. By now, most people know that domain name system servers translate human-friendly domain names into numeric IP addresses that computers need to find other computers on the internet. Over the past 4 months, attackers have been scanning the internet for routers that are vulnerable to remote exploits. When they find these susceptible routers, the attackers send code that configures the routers to use fraudulent DNS servers. The first wave hit in late in December. The campaign exploited vulnerabilities in four models of D-Link routers, including DSL-2640B, DSL-2740R, DSL-2780B, and DSL-526B. I'll hang on to this paper and I'll put up a list at the next break. Also, routers from Secutech and TotalLink that we haven't been told about yet. The rogue DNS servers used in the latest round are hosted in Russia. The best way for people to protect themselves against these attacks is to ensure that their routers are running the latest firmware. All four of the D-Link vulnerabilities under attack were fixed years ago, but many people never go through the hassle of manually installing the patches. It's on you, folks. These things were patched years ago. It's also a good idea to periodically inspect your router configurations to make sure the DNS settings are okay. A lot of people use Google's routers at 8.8.8.8 and 8.8.4.4. Cloudflare has a free DNS service at 1.1.1.1. It's never a bad idea to configure the operating system of every device to use those DNS server names as well. But sometimes malicious changes made to hack routers can overrun those OS configurations. So, how secure is your router? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299. Toll free, 1-800-790-0415. Just like Ann did from Irondequoit, New York. Hi, Ann. What's up?
I need to know how to resize a browser.
Okay. What happened to it?
Well,
is it too small, too big?
The window is too wide for my laptop screen to the extent that I can't access the scroll bars or the right-hand upper side to pull it down.
Right. So what operating system are you running?
Windows.
10?
Chrome.
Okay.
Browser.
So in your browser, at you across the top, can you still see the header that should be blue and say Chrome in the middle?
No.
Okay, what do you see at the top of your screen?
At the moment, nothing. It's blue, it's got a new tab, it's got Google in the middle.
Okay, try this. Hit the F11 key.
Yeah. Hold on a minute.
Yeah. What I'm asking her to do is F11 will resize the browser for her automatically. There are several ways to do this, but that's the easiest one if it works.
Okay. This doesn't happen all of the time. It happens frequently, but I don't know why it happens or what to do when it happens.
Right. So what sometimes happens is you've done a Zoom. We see this with some machines. If you hold down the Alt key while you're using a scroll bar on the mouse, the scroll wheel,
yeah,
it actually zooms the screen out.
Yeah.
So if it's done that, hold the Alt key down and scroll forward on that scroll wheel, and it should zoom it back down again.
Okay, so this is a way you can do it without having to drag the side in which I can't get to.
Right. Yep. That will resize the window. The other thing you should be able to do is hit the Alt spacebar, I want to say. I'm not running Windows, so I can't try it right here. and that will bring up a menu, one choice of which is to move. So you hit move, and then you can use the mouse to move the window around until you can see the scroll bars. But it is likely that what you have done is zoomed the window in, which is a great feature to have.
But you got to remember to zoom back
out.
Purpose.
Right, exactly. So by holding the F11 key and running that scroll wheel, you should see the screen get either bigger or smaller, depending on which way you're rolling the the scroll wheel in the middle of the mouse, and roll it down until you can see all the stuff that you're missing now.
Okay, I'll try that. Thank you very much indeed.
Sure. Good luck, Ann. Let us know one way or the other.
Bye-bye.
We see that fairly often, particularly in newer operating systems where that works well. And people make that mistake all the time because there's lots of things you can do with combinations of Alt and Shift and Control and mouse stuff, and sometimes we do the wrong thing, and that causes that sort of thing. But F11, if the thing has been made large enough by itself to go off screen, F11 should resize the window, and if it's the whole screen, the whole desktop that's been zoomed, then that scroll wheel. If that doesn't work, try Control scroll wheel. I think it's Alt. On my machine, it's Alt, but I'm not running Windows. But one or the other should work. Okay, back to the phones. Our next caller is Matt from Webster, New York. Hi, Matt. What's up?
Hi, Nick. Here's the deal. My girlfriend gets a lot of these robocall things. She's on Verizon, and I think her prefix has, they just call. She has a lot of anxiety and depression, and they bug her 24/7. And I was watching the news lately, and they said like four of these big companies are going to get fined and sued. Is there any way, maybe an app I could put on her phone or anything to help her not get these calls, because they're obnoxious?
What type of phone does she have?
She's got an Android, Samsung.
Okay. The good news is there are indeed some products that you can use. There's a program called Nomo Robo.
Yeah.
And that's excellent.
And there's a slight fee.
What did you say? No more robo.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no. More robo? It's no mo robo.
All right. Okay. Hold on a minute. All right. I'm just going to turn up my phone. No mo robo.
Yeah. No mo robo. It's available both for everybody listening. It's available in both the Apple App Store and the Google Play Store.
I mean, but these phones just kill her. I mean, Nick, because she's getting them like constantly, and I'm just like, I mean, I tried to sign her up for the do not call list, but
no, that doesn't do a thing. And you know, the Nomo Robo will cost you a little, just so you're aware.
$1.99 a month. $2 a month.
It's a small fee, but it's well worth it. That'll eliminate, you know, all those. I mean, I'm even getting them now where they leave the message, and it's in full Chinese.
Yeah.
Complete Chinese, and I'm going, seriously? I don't even know what the heck you're talking about, so I can sit there and tell you no.
All right, but what about me? I mean, there ain't no other free guy option that I can put on her phone, like a RoboKiller app or something that works legitimate, or how would I go about that?
No,
yeah. There are several others that I haven't had any real experience with, so I'm reluctant at this point.
Yeah, you're going to get what you pay for there. And, if you're not paying nothing, you know, and especially if you're trying to, you know, make it easier for her, the $2 a month would surely be worth it.
Yeah.
All right, because I remember when I had the Metro PCS phone. Listen, they automatically used to do it. I don't know how they knew, but it would just say block, block, block. And I'd be like, wow, but I mean, these things are out of control, man. I feel like the people that are doing this, man, I mean, they might get 1 out of 1,000 people to do whatever, but I mean, this stuff is crazy, man. It's harassment, you know.
Yeah,
what
it really
I mean?
Is. The problem is the ones I've seen for free are not so far well thought of.
Yeah.
Nomo Robo is $2 a month. Robo Killer is $3 a month. There's something called Hiya. No, that doesn't work with Verizon. That's $3 a month. There is one called Truecaller. What model Samsung phone does she have?
She's got the, hold on, let me look here. I'm going to go into her. Hold on. I hope I don't lose ya. Wait. All right, settings, about device. Wait, just give me a second.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, take your
about
time.
About phone. The phone name is Samsung SMJ320V model number.
Yeah, okay. Well, at any rate, what you want to do is look. You probably have a set of programs that are actually from Samsung. They load a lot of their own software on the phones, and look to see if there's one called Smart Call.
Okay.
That is supposed to report and block spam calls. Now,
I mean, because listen, this is serious. She has anxiety, and like every time she gets a call, she freaks out. Like she just, who's calling me? And I'm, and these people are just killing her. I mean, I think they just go down the whole Verizon list, and they're just, you know, trying to take advantage of the Verizon customers or whatever.
Right.
But,
so
you
what,
know, they know they got money or something.
Right. So what? You know? They don't care if they have money. If they can get any from you, they don't care how much you have. They just want it.
Yeah.
So here's the deal. Yeah. With something like Smart Call, when you get a call, it will either come up, of course, with the user's name or whatever, or it will come up suspected spam, or it'll come up scam or fraud. So it doesn't stop the call, but it tells you what kind of call it is.
And you can just swipe down to, you know, delete
right,
it.
Hit the hang up button or whatever, whichever it is on your phone.
Well, that's one thing she should do automatically to alleviate frustration is if it doesn't show up in her, say, her contacts list.
Okay. Yep.
Sit there and just swipe down.
Yeah, but if you have anxiety that
But the thing of it is, though, she's still going to get the calls. Even with this program, they're going to pop up on her screen.
That's why Nomo Robo would be a better choice. But certainly you can try the free option and see how well that works for her.
Yeah.
And if it doesn't, then you can go to Nomo Robo.
All right. Well, hey, I appreciate your guys' advice, and as always, have a nice weekend, fellas.
Thank you.
If you don't have Smart Call in your list of programs already, you can download it from the App Store, but it should be.
Is that on Google Play?
Yeah, it should be. Yes.
Okay.
It should be in your phone already because it's a Samsung.
And the
product.
Other one was called Nomo Robo. Nomo Robo or something like that.
Yeah, just once. Nomo Robo. Nomorobo.
One word or something.
Yep.
Cool. I appreciate it, fellas. You guys have a great weekend, man.
All right, you too. Keep smiling. Yeah, spam calls are nuts. I'm very lucky on my Google Pixel. Google automatically blocks that stuff. I have hardly seen a single robocall. Well, that's not true. It's not that I haven't seen any, but they disappear. I miss a lot, but the few that get through do get through. But mostly I don't see them because Google also has a call blocking feature, which they're slowly rolling out to other phones. But right now it's a Pixel thing. Google is essentially testing it on our phones. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Mark from Greece, New York. Hi, Mark. What's up?
Hi, guys. How are you?
Peachy, how are you?
I am doing better. I've been struggling with my arthritis, so it's
not
fun.
Man, it's worse today than it's been in a long time.
Oh, yeah, it's been horrible. But anyways, let's go on to better things. You know the lady that called in about the browser?
I do.
Problem? Windows 10 added something in their last feature update, if you want to call it that. That's in settings in ease of use. When you go into ease of use in the settings, there is a slider to adjust the text. And the text increases in everything you use, your programs, your browser,
right.
Everything. And it works beautifully if you can't see small text.
Right.
And,
I suspect that her
having to zoom on things if you don't want to zoom on a particular thing.
Yes.
This will just make everything in there bigger.
Yeah, I suspect that she in fact zoomed accidentally. But yes,
yeah.
if you're the sort of person who does zoom regularly, you can use the slider to adjust text sizes. It doesn't adjust anything else on the screen, just the size of the text, which is very nice.
Right. It's really cool. Second thing, I have a an APC backup,
yep.
Battery backup. And I don't know if you've ever heard of this happening, though. I noticed one day I heard it clicking on and off constantly. This is on my backup computer, my secondary computer. And I noticed I heard it clicking on and off all the time. And I said, geez, something's going on with it. And then I noticed the lights on that circuit in the house were going crazy, you know, blinking, you know.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Then I thought it was a problem with the electricity. When I unplugged that battery backup from the wall, all that stopped in the house.
Oh,
is there any
interesting
way that can backfeed into the system, into my electrical system in the house?
If it's not well, it certainly could.
Yeah.
And that surprises me. APC is a good company. I have an APC battery backup.
Yeah, and they're not cheap. I mean, I spent like, I don't know, almost $100 on this thing. It is not brand new. It's about 4 or 5 years old, and I have replaced the battery in it once already. I mean, it was making my lights go crazy. I thought there was something wrong with the electrical system, and I thought maybe that's what was triggering the battery backup to click constantly on and off, but I guess it wasn't.
Right.
Yeah.
No, well, yeah, it wouldn't be. But that's interesting. Just as a gee whiz, if you're looking for another battery backup system, there's a site called Woot, and in their computer section, they have the CyberPower battery backup system for $90.
Okay, I'll check it out.
It's factory reconditioned, but so what?
Yeah, right. Usually, although I've actually had better luck with some of those with things off the shelf.
Ain't that the truth?
Yeah. So, well, thank you.
All right, thanks.
All right, have a good one.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Yeah, it's important, I think, to have a battery backup on your system in case there are brownouts or blackouts. Those are brownouts are actually more damaging to a computer than you think, because if you are writing during a brownout, the power drains and it writes random garbage across your hard disk, and that's sometimes not recoverable from. But if you have a battery backup, it will continue to run even in a, depending on the kind of battery backup you get, it'll continue to provide full power during a brownout. And if there's a blackout, it'll keep the machine running for a while. And if you connect it up to that backup and run a program on your computer, it'll correctly shut down if there is an issue. So I recommend battery backups, particularly if you're in an older house or an apartment or whatever, and you're not necessarily 100% secure in your power, how clean it is. And so you definitely want to make sure that you are running something like that. Dave, you've sold a bunch of power backup, battery backup devices over time.
APC is definitely the number one. And I mean, you know, they're great. They're reliable. Matter of fact, they even give a warning. You know, if you're running it on your, say on your PC, there's a utility when you install the APC, you know, because people, like everything else, they get complacent. And, you know, you just sit there, oh, yeah, it's doing its thing. But you're running the software and it runs down the tray, it'll every so often, you know, if something was going wrong with it, it'll alert you that maybe the power, you know, the batteries in that, you might have to change out a battery cell because it's getting weak. And it'll warn you of that. But again, battery backups are, you know, no better than our regular backups. You got to maintain them, you know, and watch them. You know, I mean, just don't think just because you plug it in, that's forget, you know, plug it in and forget it. It's always going to be there. No, like anything else, it's another piece of electronics, and it can wear out. The only reason I say all this is because I did have a client one time, a couple years back. Well, I had the battery backup. Well, how long have you had it? Oh, probably 5-6 years.
Yeah.
Did you ever check it? No, because it's down behind there, and it's kind of hard for me to see. Well, that's why. It died, and you didn't pay any attention to it. You hit the button one time, and it let you know it was shutting off. So you're running on regular current. And then the system did die.
Yep, yep. And that's the other thing. You do have to change the batteries.
Yeah,
every few years.
Yeah, it's just like your car battery. How long does that last? Maybe 4 or 5 years? Right. You know, cranking and, you know, turning the engine over and everything else.
I'll tell you, I have a battery backup that's just sitting in the corner right now. I replaced it because I bought new batteries for it. I put them in, and it won't stop beeping.
Huh.
I don't know.
Bad sensor, maybe.
Maybe bad sensor. Maybe I don't think I hooked things up wrong. I did it 3 separate times. And
they're pretty hard.
Yeah, they're pretty hard to get wrong.
Yeah.
So I think it's just no good.
Could be a bad sensor that's given a false positive.
Exactly.
You know, whether it's a diode or something else that, you know, just shorted.
It doesn't owe me anything. It's old, and I've gotten a lot of life out of it, and now it's I haven't thrown it away yet, but I'm probably going to send it to one of the e-waste places, Eco Park or whatever.
There you go.
And you know, that's the other thing. They have very large batteries, and you should be very careful about how you dispose of those batteries and where you dispose of those batteries. But you do need to change them every few years.
Yeah, just don't throw them into your trash bin, you know, your dumpster if you got one of those big totes.
Right.
You know, throw it in there because, yeah, that's it. Like you say, that's an electrical device. Even if there's still some charge in there, and having that crushed, you know, could start a fire in the garbage truck.
Well, and also there's stuff you shouldn't throw away. Batteries are one of them. You want to send them to an e-waste facility. We have one in Monroe County. Of course, there are several places you can send things away. All right, we're going to take a slightly longer break. You've wasted an hour of your life with this nonsense, but you'll get a chance to do it again. We'll be back in just a few minutes with Dave Enright, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 59 minutes after the hour. You're watching the longest-running computer show in the known universe. That's right. It's Soundbites. And again, thanks to all of you who were kind enough and generous enough to help support this station. Looks like we can stay open for another 6 months, and we're delighted that you folks have stepped up to the plate. Thank you. We'll be back in just a few minutes with a whole lot more of the longest-running computer show in the known universe. That's Soundbites right here on the Truly Great, and truly grateful to you that we continue to be member-supported. Jazz 90.1. See you on the other side.
Computer talk you can understand. More Sound Bites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
WGMC Greece Rochester, a public service of the Greece Central School District. Jazz 90.1.
On Facebook at Jazz 901 FM.
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Sound Bites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And at 6 minutes after the hour, you're hurtling headlong into the second hour of the longest-running computer show in the known universe, Soundbites. You can give us a call, 585-966-CHAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free, 1-800-790-0415. And it's safe to call us because we are done with our pledge drive. Once again, I'd like to thank everyone who pledged. Bless each and every one of you. You're keeping us on the air for another 6 months, and that's a beautiful thing. And while you're calling in, I will read the next news item. A new report from a well-regarded payments consulting firm has found a lengthy list of security insanity while examining several major financial technology or fintech company mobile apps. Though, although the very nature of apps that manage and move money would suggest presumably strong security, banks and their cohorts tend to adopt new technology slower than almost any other vertical, which puts them in a bad place when it comes to security. According to one report, several mobile banking apps hard-coded private security, private certificates and API keys into their apps. Thieves could exploit this by just copying the private certificates to their computers and running any number of free password cracking programs against them. Once the attacker successfully cracked the private key, they would be able to decrypt all communication between the back-end servers and mobile devices, among other things. The API keys allow an adversary to then begin targeting the financial institution's API servers, gaining them access to data in the back-end databases. This allows attackers to authenticate the device with the back-end servers of that app, since this is what APIs use for authentication and authorization. There's a slew of other vulnerabilities, including hard-coded SQL statements, no encryption of API keys, weak encryption, bad encryption implementations, insecure random number generators, logging of secret information right on the device, and a bunch of other sloppy programming. Cyber thieves love sloppy. How secure is your mobile banking app? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free, 1-800-790-0415.
They, again, people gotta, you know, be cautious.
Well, that's exactly it. We all, you know, the ease of use of phones, the ability to do everything on your phone, it's a beautiful thing. Absolutely a beautiful thing.
But also dangerous.
But also very dangerous. And the reason we need to pay attention and the reason we need to be careful, you know, we've said this before. We're now carrying around devices that would have, horrified Orwell. Right? I mean, yeah. We can be tracked completely down to the yard.
Yeah.
We can be listened in on. We can have our phones cracked. We keep all our private information on them. And then we quite happily download apps to do banking.
Yep.
Well, yes, those apps almost always come from, if you're smart, you use the apps that actually come from your
bank
institution. But you don't know who programmed it. Mm-hmm. And what we're finding is that a lot of these are very insecure, that they've got bad coding in them. They've got
holes in them. Just like they're patching Windows, you know, no app is so secure that there can't be, you know, taken for granted at least one or two holes in it somewhere.
That's exactly right. That is exactly
somewhere
right.
In there. Unless they pay a big buck to make sure that, you know, 16 ways from Sunday. But, you know, they're also very concerned. Well, we'll play the odds, you know. For the most part, yeah, that should be pretty secure for the average person.
Yep.
They're going by statistics, and, you know, yeah, for the most part, they should be okay.
Yeah, but
you could be one of those statistics that, you know, gets hacked.
It's a crapshoot.
Mm-hmm.
You roll the dice and you take your chances. Are you willing to take a chance there?
Mm-hmm.
Fine. Fine. But...
And don't leave your, you know, some folks leave their phone laying around and everything else that, you know, I mean, and the way they can scan phones now for information and that, you know, just like they can your credit cards, you know, you're sitting there, you know, in a coffee shop and if it's, you know, doing your banking.
Yep.
Yeah, that's not probably the most bright thing to do. Wait until you get home.
Right. Yeah. Right. Or do it on a laptop where you've got a secure connection to the bank. Now, yes, someone can break into your bank from the other end. You have no control over that and you're still using it. Unless you're going to go back to putting your money under a mattress, you're going to be using a bank anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a risk you have already accepted. Whether you like it or not, you have accepted that risk. But you can mitigate future risk by using an actual laptop or desktop to make a secure connection to that bank and doing your banking that way. Now, I also would not do that on a Windows machine because you never know what's on your Windows machine. But that's a separate issue for a separate day. The reality
that's another
is,
argument, another day.
Right. The reality is that if you're going to do banking, you really don't want to be doing it out of your phone. And, of course, everybody does now. Mm-hmm. You know, you've got the apps that let you tap the phone or show the ticket or whatever it is, the thing that you're doing. And Apple now wants to put all your health information on the iPhone. Oh, no. No, not going to do that.
So that could be hacked.
Right, right.
And then start getting 16 million ads for this drug or that drug, you know, trying to push out. So you'll go to your doctor and say, well, could I try this or can I try that?
Yep. Well, that's the way it works now anyway, right? I mean, because there are no rules anymore. You know, you can put up a website that says pretty much anything you want it to say. And now people are going into their doctors and saying, say, I heard about this drug.
Mm-hmm.
And your doctor has to say, well, unless you're pregnant, that drug's not for you. Are you pregnant? Well, no, I'm a guy. Oh, okay. Then probably that's not a drug I'm going to prescribe for you.
You know, that's one other thing that has gotten out of control is you're on TV. You know, and everybody's just, you know, like you say, glued into it. The advertisements for various drugs. And they sit there and say, well, you know, if you suffer from this, go ask your, tell your doctor you want this. Oh, here's some of the side effects.
And then the entire rest of the 60-minute commercial
is all
side
the side effects. And if you have, suicidal tendency.
Right, right.
Oh, yeah, I want to take something that's going to give me, I want to have suicidal tendencies. Get out of here.
I personally am not the sort of person who is willing to trade anal leakage for restless leg syndrome. Sorry, just not something I intend to do.
Really?
Yeah. Or suicidal tendencies for restless leg syndrome. Perfectly happy to have restless. I'm not saying it's not a horrendous thing to have happen to people when it happens to them. I'm saying there are things I won't trade for it.
Well, the thing of it is, though, is they sit there and you wonder at times, wait a minute, these side effects are worse than the actual disease or right. thing that well, I'm trying to
The other thing is to be a little smart about it. I went to my doctor one time. He said, I want to put you on this drug, but I have to tell you, it doubles your risk of heart attack. I said, okay, what's my risk of heart attack? Now, double your risk of heart attack sounds bad.
Yeah.
I said, what's my risk of heart attack now? He said, a little under 1%. I said, okay, so with this drug, my risk of heart attack will now be a little under 2%? He said, yeah, 1.5% to 2%. I said, I can literally live with that.
Mm-hmm.
That's okay.
Yeah.
You know, if my risk of heart attack was 50% and it doubled it,
yeah,
I think I don't want it.
Right. But see, again, that's where we've said right along, folks. The internet is a great tool, but you just have to be cautious in how you use it. Because just like everything else, you know, too much information can be had and they can bend statistics one way or the other. And that's why we'll always tell you, you know, consult your doctor. He knows best. He's the one that has the doctor in front of his name, not the internet.
Right.
And, you know, before going and experimenting with this or that, or ask for that, always consult your doctor. Just like right. you come and consult us for your computer problems, you go to right. a professional.
And if you have any hypochondriacal tendencies, and I do, and I know this about myself, so I don't go look at these sites.
Mm-hmm.
But you listen to the ads and you think, yeah, I get nervous. Yeah, I don't sleep well at night. Yeah,
you could talk yourself into
anything. And so you want to be really careful about that stuff. Just the problem now is that it's on you. It's the Wild West out there again. Most of the regulations have been overturned, and you can't trust anybody to regulate stuff for you. You have to go and look. And the same is true of computers. One question I always get from people is, should, you know, is Google Drive trustworthy? Is it secure?
Uh-huh.
Is it secure? Is it safe?
Yeah. Mm.
Okay. That's the Marathon Man.
Yeah.
Man, that movie scared me. Okay. Here's the thing about Google Drive security. It's reasonably secure.
Mm-hmm.
Now, as we know, every single possible system out there, including your personal system, is hackable. Google's a big target, and people are trying to hack it all the time. I personally know some people who do security for Google, and they're some of the smartest people I've ever met, so I trust them. But the reality is, you don't know, so you want to make sure that your stuff is secure. Now, in terms of security, your data are, in fact, secured. They are encrypted on Google's site. They use SSAE 16, ISAE 3402 type 2. For those of you who know this stuff, SOC 2 audited, ISO 27001 certification. They're compliant with FISMA, FERPA, HIPAA. They adhere to the safe harbor privacy principles. So in fact, they're secure enough for the federal government. Almost all of its functions. But if that's not enough for you, you can always add encryption programs to it. You can encrypt files your own self. That's easy enough to do. So be aware that those things do exist, and that you can encrypt things on your own when you want to do that. So be aware and be careful what you do, but also don't get nuts. You know, the reality is that, yes, you will have those times when someone will be trying to break into wherever you keep your data. Dropbox, notoriously wide open. They've been breached. I can't tell you how many times. So I don't use Dropbox for anything that isn't transitory and public data. So Steve and I sometimes trade sound bites, sound files, the archive files over that. Well, that's completely public information. I don't care who has it. You can download it for free. Why would you steal it?
Yeah, really. Right?
So I don't care about that. And if I'm sending something to somebody, I do a computer minute here on Jazz 90.1, and I send that to Rob in a Dropbox. Okay.
Yeah.
So what? They're gonna broadcast it, for Pete's sake.
They just get it to maybe a day early.
Right. Exactly.
They know.
So yeah, I don't do it too. I don't do it too far ahead. I want it to be something at least.
Yeah.
Mildly newsworthy.
Mm-hmm.
Right. At least by Thursday when it starts, and then by Sunday afternoon, of course, it's who cares anymore. But yeah. You want to be careful what you send out there. You can pre-encrypt things before you send them up to Google Drive. But Google Drive is quite secure. You are secure in your dealings directly with Google Drive. And anything you share with people is secure because it's all going on to Google's HTTPS technology. And it's a good certificate and blah, 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 blah. So there's all that good stuff. SHA 256, SHA. So, you're good there. And there's a lot of good stuff. So, it's fairly secure. Nothing is 100% secure. Absolutely nothing. SHA 2, PKCS number one, SHA 256 with RSA encryption. That's pretty decent signed thing, as long as you see the little padlock is mm-hmm. locked up there in the corner, then you know that you're secure. And so I don't mind writing things that are private between two or three people, and using and even I do that in a coffee shop when I grab my Chromebook and wander off into the wilds of the world. I feel secure there because I know I'm on a secure, encrypted linkage and that it's secure when it's up there and encrypted when it's up there. But to be completely paranoid about it, Google holds those encryption keys.
Mm-hmm.
So if they wanted to, they could decrypt your stuff. Do they want to? What's the likelihood?
Yeah.
They have 100
You got better odds of being hit by lightning with two, you know.
In the Lincoln Tunnel twice.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Yeah. You have a better chance of winning the lottery.
Yeah.
That's how unlikely it is. Mm. But yeah, so, you know, there's 100 quintillion terabytes of data on Google servers. They're going to come looking for you.
Yeah.
Well, I better look at what Mary wrote yesterday. It's just not going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
So be
due diligence.
Be due diligent, but you don't have to be completely paranoid.
Yeah.
And if Google were looking at your stuff, it would be a robot looking at it to get keywords and stuff. One of the things that is beautiful about Google Docs is how easy it is to search. Well, how do they search? There's a robot that goes through and grabs all the words and keeps track of them. That's not reading your document.
No.
That's indexing your document, which is a very different thing. So they may know that you used certain words in a document. It doesn't mean they know which documents those are in or how you put them together.
Yeah. They don't know really the total content.
Right, right. So you want to be fairly careful about what you do, but you don't want to necessarily be terribly paranoid. Although I have to say, paranoia is the natural state of a systems administrator. There is no systems administrator who is paranoid enough. Mm-hmm. That's a truth. That's a true fact.
Yep.
And you are now the system administrator of your own machine. It used to be that nobody cared, but now you need to.
You have to. Yeah.
I should teach a course in home system administration.
Yeah.
How to administer your home machine. You know, there's things that I did for 20 years as a professional systems administrator.
Now, that teaching just the average person.
Right. And now I get home and I think, well, I don't have to do that anymore. I don't have to do that anymore. I don't have to do that anymore.
You just do it on a different level. You just do it on a different level.
Right. There are some fundamental things that I still do all the time. One of the things that I do is I keep a site book.
Mm-hmm.
And a site book is for each and every one of my machines. I write down everything that's on it, every change I made, everything I did, how I did it, why I did it, and what the result was.
Mm-hmm.
Does that seem just a little bit anal retentive? No, because I was a systems administrator, and it's the normal way you do things.
It's ingrained in you.
Right. Yeah. However, the other day, I was setting up my one non-Chromebook laptop, and I was putting, I have Linux on it, and I was doing some stuff, and I thought, you know what I don't have on here? X. And I thought, well, I put it on my main machine about 2 years ago,
mm-hmm.
and it's great, and I want it on this machine, so I can either go and figure out how I did it, or I can just go look at my site book. And it took me 10 minutes to install it on the other machine. I copied and pasted from one site book to the other, and I was done. I have a list of everything on that machine, so if I had to redo it, I could redo it. Well, I've actually got programs that will. There's a program that will take the manifest from your Linux machine and save it to a file, and then if you have to redo that machine, you just point Linux to that file, and it puts back all the software that it had.
Mm-hmm.
So that's actually pretty easy. But what's the syntax for that? I don't keep it in my head. I keep it in my site book.
There you go.
And my site book is on Google Docs. So if you wanted to break into Google and see what I've got installed on my computer, you're welcome to do so. Good luck to you. You still have to break the SHA 256 encryption. But the fact is that having some sort of documentation for your system, whether you go to the anal retentive length that I do and that all systems administrators should do, or you just keep a list of things, you definitely want to keep your product keys, all the product keys for all the stuff that you have. You want to keep a list of all your current passwords. Current passwords. You want to keep a list of what you have backed up where, and that'll be good. But so there are certain minimal things that you need to keep up to date. And like we said earlier in one of our news stories, one of the things you have to be sure is that your systems are up to date. Is your router up to date? Does it have the latest firmware? If your answer is, I don't know, go check it today. Break out the manual. Yes, they all come with manuals. And if you've lost the manual, go look it up online. You can look up a manual and make sure that you do that stuff. And the same with your printer. Does your printer need an upgrade in its firmware? I don't know. Do you? Your computer? Your laptops? Your television? Your Nest devices? Everybody's got smart devices. I'll tell you what. You know who doesn't have smart devices? Systems administrators. That's who doesn't have smart devices. We know how vulnerable all those things are, and we tend to not have them in our homes. But as convenient as they are, the same thing with your phone and with your tablets. Are they running the latest versions of their operating systems and the latest firmware underneath? Now, with phones, it's very hard. If you bought a phone from Samsung, then you have to deal with Samsung to get updated. You bought a phone from LG, you have to deal with LG, Huawei, et cetera, et cetera. So you want to be, you're going to find that there's multiple places you got to go to update stuff. But certainly anything that faces out into the real world, like your router, like your phone, like your tablets, particularly when you're not at home, your laptops when you're not at home, those things truly need to be updated regularly. And as we saw from a couple weeks ago, we talked to Ida. Her Netgear app is not quite the same thing as logging in via the web browser to the router itself. There's different sets of passwords, and generally the password from the browser end is generic. It's always, if it's a Netgear router, it's admin password. So you want to make sure that you change those. While you think about that and write down all the forward-facing stuff on your network, we're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, me, Nick Francesco, and you. 29 minutes after the hour, Soundbites, member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And at 35 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. Yes, Steve Ray, one step ahead of the law somewhere in the Midwest. But we're talking once again, I believe, to Mark from Greece. Is this you again, Mark?
Yeah, it's me. I forgot to mention something that I thought would be very helpful to people. Anybody who's using the Security Tangle, of course, and I hope they are using it, there's an extension for the Malwarebytes program that you can use in the browser that actively blocks pages that it knows or thinks are malicious.
Nice.
And it runs in Chrome, and it runs in Firefox.
That's a good point. I will add that. That's a good point.
It's a beautiful add-on. If you're paying for Malwarebytes, I think you're already protected. I'm not 100% sure.
Yeah.
But it can't hurt. The other thing is if you really want to be super, super protected, try Ice Dragon browser.
Right.
Super, super secure browser. Runs off of Mozilla. So it looks like Firefox, but also has its own filtering tools built in, and the Malwarebytes extension runs in that also.
Right. Good thought.
If
yeah,
one
there's
doesn't
a...
catch it, the other right. one does.
Right.
Yep.
There's a bunch of different browsers that most people never hear of. They know of Edge and Chrome and Firefox, but there are many, many, many other browsers, some of which are specifically designed to be secure, some of which are just lightweight or easier to use or whatever, and Ice Dragon is based on Mozilla, and it's a very nice one. Thanks, Mark.
Oh, no problem. And there's also a browser out there that'll let you look. It looks like it's Netscape browser, and I can't remember the name of it right now.
That's funny.
Just like Netscape.
I remember Netscape. I remember Mosaic because I'm
browser old. The old days and loved your Netscape browser.
Yep.
There is one out there, and I can't remember the name, but it's out
That's
there.
Funny. That's funny. Yeah. Thanks.
Okay, thanks. Thanks for putting me on again.
Yep, have fun, Mark. Yeah, those of you who don't know, the original web browser was Mosaic and then was quickly followed with Netscape and then about 6 million others. Those of us who are old, there's a certain nostalgia for the look and feel of Mosaic and Netscape. That's funny. I'll have to look that up and see what that is. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Tom from Brighton, New York. Hiya, Tom. What's up?
I'd like to pick up on your conversation you were having about, you know, robocalls and things like that. It's a little bit slightly off topic, not directly related to computers. I think most of your discussion concerned probably with cell phones, you know. But
right.
Some of us are still using landline for certain reasons. And, you know, I've contacted Frontier. They don't offer, they do offer no-mo-robo
right.
For other geographic locations, but not for the Rochester area. I specifically asked them about that. And, of course, that's pretty annoying because there's really no utility that I know of that can block those robocalls from the Frontier landline system.
Well, it is, in fact, free for landlines. Oh, well, for your VoIP landlines, which is what Frontier is nowadays, right?
No, it's not. They don't offer that through. You can't use it on the Frontier landline system. It's available for outside of Rochester. It is available, but if you go to the website, they specifically say it's not available.
If you go to the Nomo Robo website,
no, to the Frontier.
Oh well, go right to the Nomo Robo website.
But how would you run that on your landline on the Frontier landline?
Well, I'm on their website now.
Yeah.
And I scroll down to landlines and click the big yellow sign up now button, and one of the landlines listed is Frontier Communications.
Yes. But not in Rochester. That's what Frontier tells me.
Well, that doesn't seem to be what Nomo Robo themselves.
Yeah, well, when they say it's available for Frontier, they're not saying it's available everywhere on Frontier.
Well, okay, whatever. But I'm, you know, it certainly can't hurt to talk to the Nomo Robo people. Just because Frontier doesn't offer it doesn't mean Nomo Robo doesn't offer it themselves. Right. I mean, I don't, like I said, I don't know, but it certainly can't hurt to talk to them.
Right. You know, the other thing about these robocalls is some of them, of course, they're just trying to sell you something. But there's a lot of these. I'm getting an enormous number of hang-up calls from the caller ID says it's from, you know, Akron, Ohio, or some California, or wherever. And as soon as I pick the phone up, it's a hang-up. So it's a malicious, annoying series of calls.
Well, here's what I've done, and I've recommended this to people many, many times. We've got a link on our website somewhere. What I do is two things. First, if it doesn't come up as somebody in my contacts list,
sure,
I don't answer.
Right.
Let me finish.
Mm-hmm.
I let it go to voicemail.
Yeah.
My voicemail starts with the sound for a disconnected phone.
That's something I haven't tried yet.
So if it's a robocall, yeah, it hears that sound and takes you off the list because they don't want to waste time calling disconnected phones.
Okay. But here's the question. Why would someone be going to the effort of making those kinds of calls? I'm not talking about commercial calls where they're trying to sell you something, just to annoy you.
What happens is they make all these millions upon millions upon millions of robotic calls. And they compile lists. These are people who answer unknown phone numbers. They then sell those lists to the real robocallers,
yeah,
which means they see it's these first tier people who find all the blocked numbers and the out of service numbers, which they think I am, and everything else. So they then sell the list of answered phones to the robocallers.
Even if it's answered by your automatic caller ID or whatever. Yeah.
Right, which is why I added that sound.
That's a good technique, yeah.
Right. So what happens is I'll get a call from Akron, Ohio, or wherever, and then I won't hear from them for 3 months, 6 months.
Yeah, but here's the thing. This is the 21st century. It's the year almost 2020. The technology is certainly available to all the cell phone and landline providers. The monkey should be on their back to fix this, not on our back.
I completely agree.
I pay every month my Frontier bill, and I also pay my AT&T cell phone bill. It's their responsibility to do this.
I completely agree. This is why I'm on a Google phone, frankly, because Google does do this. They automatically, because I'm on a Pixel phone, they automatically, I had to say yes, right, in the settings, but they automatically block known robocallers. Doesn't mean I don't get robocalls, because there's always somebody new.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But I went from 8, 10, 12 calls a day to one every couple of days.
Why isn't our government, which we also pay for, as you know, you pay income taxes.
Dearly.
Why aren't they doing something about it?
Yeah, I don't talk about politics on this show.
Okay, all right.
Do not get me started.
Yeah.
We don't have enough time.
Okay.
But the reality is that you're absolutely right. This is supposed to be a convenience for us, not for the robocallers.
It's not a convenience. We're paying good money for these things.
Right. Well, we're paying for the convenience of carrying around a phone. But it should be for our convenience. We're paying for our convenience, not for the robocaller's convenience.
Yeah.
So with something like the fact that I have a Pixel phone and Google does the blocking for me, and the fact that any call gets through, here's that three-toned out-of-service sound.
Yeah, I'll give that a try. That's a good suggestion.
Yeah, we've been talking about that for a couple of years. It really, for me at least, I don't know for everybody. For me, it actually works.
Okay.
I almost never get a second call from the same number.
Right. Of course, that also means that people who do call me with a legitimate phone call, aren't going to get a respectful message saying, please leave a message.
Right. Right. They hear, do. Nick's not available. Please leave a message.
Okay.
Yeah. And by then, of course, it's a robocall. They don't know English. Yeah. They hear do, and then they hear this sound, which they think is this line is no longer in service, and they take you off the list.
Does the fidelity of the reproduction, is it going to matter that much?
It didn't with me.
Okay. So I can just make a recording of it, then play it back through the phone, and then answer.
Right. That's what I did. And it was a fairly, my phone has a fairly decent microphone, but it's not spectacular by any means.
Mm-hmm.
But it worked fine.
Okay. Well, thanks a lot. That's a good suggestion.
Yeah, good luck.
All right, take care.
You too.
Bye.
Robocalls are terribly inconvenient, and blocking them is becoming everybody's number one phone question. Something like a Google Pixel phone. Most of the carriers do have. I always thought you could call like Verizon or whatever and get them to block those numbers for you. Maybe not, but that's not a landline. That's true. But certainly talk to your vendor for that and see what they have to say about it. But you should be able to block a lot of that stuff. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Mark from Gates, New York. Hi, Mark. What's up?
Hello?
Mike. Sorry, Mike.
Yeah, right. Well, I just got a couple of questions. On Windows 10, when are they going to be changing over to charging people?
Yeah. Yeah, they've talked about, look, here's the deal with Windows 10 charging for their product. They have made no formal announcement of that, but on their earnings call, where they talk strictly to their investors, they have said they're going to do it. Now, when they're going to do it or how they're going to do it or when it starts, nobody knows. They've made no public announcement. But for the last 2 years, during their earnings call, they have said that one of the ways that they're going to increase the earnings, the share price, the amount of money, what do you call that, the dividend that you get from a share is by charging for Windows. They've been saying that to investors for 2 years. Now, any company will lie to anybody about anything, but nobody lies to their investors. So we know it's coming. We just don't know when.
Now, okay. Well, the other question is one for Dave. I wanted to find out where his shop is, where he's working in Victor there.
Steve's place is called Mac-Ave, I think, .com. Mm-hmm. And I'm bringing up the site now so that I can tell you where it is. It is, there it is. I don't see it. Hold on, I'm scrolling. Steve keeps this in his head. There's a map right on the website. Look at that.
You do have a Mac, correct?
Yeah.
No, he does Windows stuff too.
Okay.
Okay. I don't see an address. Steve, how do I not see an address here? Store. Sorry, the site's or this network is a little bit slow. Yeah, I don't see a. Am I? What is wrong with me? How am I not seeing? Maybe it's under About Us, and I just should have looked there first. That would have been clever.
Okay, Google, where is Mac Store in Victor?
I found a few locations for Mac Store near Victor.
Yeah, Steve, if you're listening, text in. Here it is. It's got all kinds of wonderful information, and not.
Yeah, it's on 251.
Is it? Or, yeah. You know, you look Mac Store, and that could be the
Jesse Group.
Yeah, Jesse Group.
Yeah, it's on Victor Menden Road.
There it is, 7716 Victor Menden Road.
7166.
No, 7716.
16.
Okay.
7716 Victor Menden Road in Victor.
Okay. And the other thing I wanted to ask is, excuse me. Where is the place for recycling computers in Victor? Do you know?
I do not know that. I'm sorry. There are several recycling places in town. Monroe County has one.
Yeah, and you can also just call the Victor Town Hall. They might be able to direct you to a center maybe they have that they know of in town for you.
Okay. Thank you very much, Jim.
You're very welcome.
All right. Good luck.
Okay. Bye.
Yeah, I'm afraid I don't have that address in my head. It's somewhere on our website, but I don't know where at the moment.
One thing I got to mention, though, and we were talking about this before, I'm getting excited. Just like you were a few years ago. And what I'm talking about, folks, is they finally got green light coming into my neighborhood. And we're already up to 52%.
Wow.
Matter of fact, I got to get my neighbors out there. And it's called the Pardee area. That's the whole problem, though. It goes from my street, Empire, all the way up to Culver, all the way down to Hellendale, and then all the way out to Norton Street. So it's a pretty big area.
Yeah, but the problem is you can, like, in one direction you can spit and hit a green light house, and the other way you can throw a rock and hit a green light house.
Yeah, and it's there.
And then not you. They haven't hit you.
So I'm trying to get all my neighbors right now to, in that area, the Pardee and Norton area, to just sign up. And we've been telling folks, you know, it only costs a penny to say that you're interested and you're not signing a commitment. But, you know, it's like, oh, so close to get 500 megabits. Ah, I can taste it.
And it's, you know, 500 megabits for $50 a month. It's so fast. It's so fast. Well, it's a relative speed. Now, you have to understand, in general, this is all a relative speed.
Yeah.
Because if the other end is slow.
Yeah, but I'm only doing 60 now.
Right.
Hello, 60 versus even close to 500? I'll settle for 450.
No, I get that. I do get that. And I will say that when I click on a movie on Netflix and it goes 1%, 2%, 99% and the movie starts, actually faster than I can say it.
Yeah,
I'm a happy little camper.
Yeah, I mean, well, that's the whole thing, folks. And I mean, let's face it, Mr. Galassano was not an idiot in that he saw this is the way the future is going. Everybody is tied to their phones and their tablets and everything else. If you don't believe me, just while you're driving along, if you go by bus stops or just see people walking on the street, I'll guarantee you, 75% of them are looking down at their phone as they're going along.
Well, ain't that the truth?
You know, it's like, you know, that's my job now. You know, I sit there and I drive for a living. And the number of bus stops or that I go by, and there's all you see are people looking down at their phone and texting away. You know, right. We've just become so attached to these devices, it's like we can't live without them.
Right. By the way, while you're picking that up, if you're interested in recycling, just go to Google and type in electronic recycling Rochester, New York. You get a whole list of places that do electronic recycling, including Maven and Rock Recycling and Eco Park. You should be able to find someplace near you that does recycling, either normally, regularly, daily, or they have, you know, certain towns have a week of electronic recycling stuff. And that's not recycling. That's electronic recycling, which is a very different thing. And they don't have quite the same.
They're capable of handling these circuit boards and everything else, which could be harmful if they were just thrown into a landfill.
Right, that's exactly right, and they will break that stuff down and get rid of the toxic elements. And so you don't want to just throw away electronics; you want to give them to a electronics recycling center, and that's probably your best bet. And you know, put them all together and make it happen once a month, once a year, depending on how often you get rid of that stuff. All right, that music tells me that we're done. For another week, I want to thank Dave Enright. I really want to thank everybody who called in, and I particularly want to thank everybody who pledged. Bless each and every one of you. Thank you so much. We are so honored that you are members of this family. It's you people who keep us on the air. I want to apologize to everybody calling in at the last minute. You got to call in early. We can't take calls at the last moment. But we want to thank everybody who did call in. Don't go away. George is coming in to play the best German music you'll hear all week. And we will be back next week with a whole lot more of the longest running computer show in the known universe. That's right. It's Soundbites right here on the Truly Great. And truly grateful to you that we can continue to be member supported. Jazz 90.1. We will see you in 166 hours.